Right. If I get up there and I'm like, all right, let's try and count, you know, do this. She's like, Dad, this, I already know what I'm doing. You don't have to tell me. See, look.
All right, and I am here with Jared McKinney.
That's me.
Hello, sir.
Hey.
So let's start with where are you from?
From southeastern Kentucky. You know, kind of how the state has that little tip on the eastern edge there, right around that tip, kind of close to Pikeville. That's where most people know.
So eastern Kentucky.
Okay. Yeah, way up in the sticks, the hills and the hollers.
Sure. So you were born there, and what brought you from there to here?
Actually, some family stuff. I moved to Lexington, lived there for a while for school and different things. Then I had a family member in Lebanon, Kentucky, go through some stuff and decided to move down there and help out. I was there for about 6 or 8 months. And there's more cows than people. Like if they took a cow census, which I'm sure is like a cow census type thing, but there's literally more cows than people in this town. I was like, all right, I need to go somewhere where there's like a two-story building.
Right.
And Bowling Green was just the closest place on the map.
I got
So I ended up here.
So you went to high school in Lexington?
In eastern Kentucky.
Okay.
A place called Allen Central High School, which is no longer a high school. They just consolidated it.
I may have did a bit of research. Is that Floyd County?
It is Floyd County. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So you're near Hazard and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I got you. Yeah, I've been there before.
Oh, nice.
That is a very small place.
It is. Not a lot going on there. Beautiful.
Sure.
Gorgeous.
If you like cows.
Yeah. But yeah, that's but that's about it.
If you're
it.
Into trees
yeah,
and mountains.
If you're into trees, man, they got good trees.
Good trees
there. Yeah.
How old were you when what was your first instrument? Because I know you play more than one thing.
My first instrument was probably like one of those kiddie drum sets that's like sort of a good drum set.
Right.
And I got one of those when I was probably 4 or 5. But the first thing that I got to where I was actually like, I'm going to learn how to play this and do this. I got an electric bass when I was probably 10, I think.
Okay.
And then, you know, I got a little, I think it was a DVD. I think DVDs were a cool thing. But
did anyone in your family play music?
Or? Yeah, it is actually a pretty musical family. My mom and my dad, they were in a band together. He played drums and she sang. They did like 80s covers. And
oh, really?
Yeah, they cut an EP, actually. I've still got the original Reel tape.
What kind of songs are they covering?
A lot of Stevie Nicks, Billy Idol.
I got you.
You know.
That's awesome.
Heart. Just and like I grew up around.
I started
it,
saying, is that the stuff you would have been hearing growing up?
So like you know, in eastern Kentucky, they don't really care too much about you know underage people in bars. So you know, here I am, like a 2-3 year old kid, like in a bar, you know, watching my parents play, and my grandpa too. He was a singer. He was a cop and an FBI agent up in D.C. in the late '60s. And kind of an intimidating dude, but he sang in kind of like a doo-wop revival type band up there with like a big horn section and all that.
Okay, wow.
So, yeah, it's all over the place. And then you know, eastern Kentucky, front porch picking. You know, someone always had like an acoustic guitar or banjo or something. There's always music around.
Right.
Yeah.
So, how old were you when you first played music in front of people?
Not
at a bar, but I mean,
just in front of people. It was probably pretty young, like before I got that bass, because I would have toy keyboards and things. I remember I was really into The Lion King when it came out.
Right.
And I forget who it was, but somebody bought me this keyboard that was like kind of like a sing and play like Lion King song. So like I think that was the first time I was like, hey, check this out. And I'd be like, circle of life.
Yeah,
you know?
Nailing the Elton John.
I don't know about nailing it, but that was probably the first time. And then actually like booking shows and playing in front of people. I think I booked my first show and played it. I think that was like my freshman year of high school.
And where was that show at?
That was in downtown Prestonsburg, kind of in like a parking lot. And it was, and I remember it, It was in 2001, I think, because Johnny Cash and John Ritter died. Everybody remembers Johnny Cash. No one cares too much about
John Ritter.
John Ritter. I mean, that was a big hit for me. I mean, Johnny Cash is one thing, but, you know, Three's Company. Oh, mm-hmm. My heart.
Mm-hmm.
And the TV It. Oh. But but yeah, I remember doing like a couple of Johnny Cash.
First gig.
Yeah.
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 So you play your first gig in Preston. What instrument are you playing then?
I think I did like an acoustic guitar set.
Okay, so you're singing and playing acoustic.
Yeah.
Kind of a singer songwriter mm-hmm. kind of a thing.
Yeah, that same year I recorded my first little like 2-song EP.
Do you record it yourself, like on an 8-track?
I did it. Well, my grandpa, the intimidating one, has owned and operated a radio station over there for about like 35 years. So I just kind of went back in the production room, and I think it was digital. It was straight from the board into the computer. That's how that worked. Yeah.
Right on. Are you just going by your name at that point?
Did you
have a stage name?
I did. I had a stage name. Listen how angsty and teenagey this is. I think it was Stupid Guy Alone. Was
Stupid Guy Alone.
Stupid Guy Alone.
Right.
Was my...
What was the turnout like for Stupid Guy Alone?
Well, believe it or not, it wasn't too bad because there's nothing to do in Eastern Kentucky.
Sure.
This is like, oh, well, man, I could go out there and burn that mattress out back. It's been needing that for a while. Or this guy's going to play some Johnny Cash songs. All right. Well, you know, it's,
Jerry told me stupid. There's a stupid feller by himself playing over here.
This old dumb stupid feller. He's
Jenny Riley playing. State Park over that kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't remember it being completely dead, so it must have.
Must not been.
I feel like if my first show was just a total wash, like that might have stuck with me. So it was probably all right.
What was your first band?
It was like pop punk, and we had two names. It was Passamaquoddy,
mm-hmm.
which is a reference from Pete's Dragon. That's the town that they're from.
Okay.
And but that people are like, what? How do you say that? What? How do you spell that? What is this? So we changed it to Eat the Emu.
Eat the Emu?
Yes, Eat the Emu. And I mean, it sounded like, you know, a 15-year-old kid who loved Blink 182. It's exactly what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. And was that still Eastern Kentucky?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a 3-piece. Me and just some friends that were in the high school band. Right. You know. Kind of got together and did that.
Any other high school bands before you head over this way or to Lexington?
I've been in way too many bands. But another first is I was in a band with my high school band teacher.
Okay.
And that was more of like a Cannibal Corpse, Morbid Angel deal.
You did a complete 180.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it was going on at the same time too. So,
yeah.
Which, and I've always liked anything and everything. I always say except for like 80% of rap and like 70% of country. Pretty much anything else, I'll take it.
Right.
But yeah, and that was called Gut Wrench. So that was...
Yeah. Yeah. I have to ask out of curiosity. In Gut Wrench.
Yes.
Are you drop D tuning?
Oh, I'm pretty sure we were like drop C. Yeah, it was brutal.
So you're actually
gruesome.
Going far beyond like when I was younger, like if you wanted to sound heavy, you went to drop D. But you guys, gut wrench,
yeah,
drop C.
Yeah, we were very guttural.
That big E string flopping,
and it was pretty neat too. It was.
Did you sing?
No, I did not sing. I just kind of played rhythm guitar. Like at this point, I think at one of the band practices, I learned what palm muting was. I was like, oh wow, like that's how you do this. Cool. All right.
Yeah.
I can do chuggy chuggy things.
Sorry
now.
To say, you're doing the chuggy. Yeah. You're playing rhythm good time.
So I'm doing rhythm. My band teacher is singing and playing lead. And
how old was he?
Or
how
we
much
were
older than you, I guess.
Let's see. I think he graduated high school in like 93 or 94. So I don't know what that would put him as, but he wasn't terribly, terribly older than me. Like, he was still young enough to where, like, he was one of the cool...
It was relatable, yeah.
Yeah, you know. But his wife played bass and also sang, and then one of his crazy friends played drums, and this guy was just nuts, but his wife would hit all those, like, really, really high screeches.
Right.
It was pretty fun.
Let me ask you this too. Are you self-taught or did you take lessons?
Mostly self-taught. I had a fairly decent grasp about like what I was doing and what I wanted to do before I got to school. School helped me out a lot too. Right. But you know, mostly self-taught.
As far as like guitar, did someone show you, hey, this is a G? Or did you?
I had a great uncle who, which he's dead now, but he was a bluegrass picker, moved up to like Michigan in the 60s and whatnot, cut a couple bluegrass records. But he kind of showed me my first chords. I came in and I was playing, what was it, like Ghost Riders in the Sky, and I was playing it all on one string. And he's like, okay, well, you can just, you know, kind of keep it in this, you know, first position. Here's all the chords, everything you need is just right here. You just got to bop around a little bit. It's like, oh, okay, yeah. Cool. But yeah, he was Uncle Joe. He was the guy that kind of
got you started.
So got me started, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah. Right on. So you moved from there to Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
Any bands in Lexington?
Yes. And there were still probably four or five in Eastern Kentucky. Like I said, there's just too many to count. But in Lexington, I got with a group called Welcome Strangers, and they still kind of play, but they're a little bit older than me, and they just kind of do, every year they do what they call Halloweezer. So they're like a Weezer cover band.
Okay.
And they do that every year, and that's about all they do. But that's when I started kind of playing more pop influenced music. Right. Before that, it was mostly like pop punk or like hardcore punk or metal or, you know, screamo type stuff. But this was where I was finally like, oh, okay, this is pretty and fun.
Right.
It can be cool.
Yeah. What was the first time you could play at a 21 and up establishment? Where would that have been?
That would have been in Lexington with Welcome Strangers.
And where'd you play?
I don't remember. I know we used to play Buster's a lot. Buster's, Al's Bar, Green Lantern, and Cosmic Charlie's. It would have been one of those. I think Cosmic Charlie's.
Sorry to say, I think the first time I ever played Lexington was Cosmic Charlie's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which it's like a completely different building now, isn't it?
It's in like a little shopping mall next to, or last time I played there, who knows, I'm old, but.
See, I think they like changed buildings like within the past year, year and a half.
Used to be kind of like an Irish pub.
Right,
in
yeah.
A shopping mall kind of strip.
There. Yeah, that's gone, I think.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that. Well, learn something new on these podcasts too. Yes. Guys, don't go to Cosmic Charlie's next to the Irish pub. It's
use that
there.
Little universe box in your pocket and get
just
a current address.
Don't listen to your memories. So what year do you come to Bowling Green?
That would be 2011 early.
Okay. And why did you come to Bowling Green?
Just because it was the next place on the map that had civilization. You know, it was pretty funny because I had no idea that Bowling Green had any type of music scene or any like culture this or that. And I moved here. I ended up moving to Royal Arms Apartments, which is right next to the Manor. Rest in peace.
Right. I remember the Manor.
And yeah. I remember going through my Facebook feed and saw that Jason Sadler lived in Bowling Green. Mm-hmm. And we were guitar majors together at EKU back in 2005,
oh, really?
2006.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay.
So I guess there was a, I guess Placo maybe had quit playing bass for the Carmadons.
Chris.
Yeah. And he's like, I was like, dang, hey, Jason, you're here. What's going on? What's, you know, what's the things to do?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, you know, just got to open for a band. You know, I know you can do it. You want to come over and check it out and see what you think? And I was like, all right, yeah. So I was lucky enough to where, like, within the first couple months of moving here, I'd kind of nudged my way into the music scene and started meeting people. And
so because of that, your first band in Bowling Green was?
Was the Carmadons. Carmadons. Yep.
And you played, how long did you play with the Carmadons?
Not terribly long. It was probably under a year because it wasn't too long before we decided to do something different. And same personnel, kind of. We had finally finalized the personnel, so like a new name kind of seemed appropriate, and then we were Heavy Chase. And we did that for a couple of years. And that was the first time in Bowling Green where like I feel like I had a decent influence over the sound as a whole. Right. With Carmadons, that kind of sound and jive was sort of established.
It was there before you got there.
Yeah. So with Heavy Chase, I was able to kind of, I don't know, kind of do a little bit of me.
You and Jason's guitar work on that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, there's still a lost EP somewhere that I wish I could find that was never released. But that was good times and really good music and kind of furthered the whole kind of pop rock taste in my mouth that I've been going for so hot and heavy these past couple of years.
Right. So after Heavy Chase, then what?
After Heavy Chase was Dunskey's, it took me a little while to kind of figure out what I wanted to do because I didn't necessarily feel like I really knew enough people or had enough connections to where I could maybe do something all of my own and have it kind of pull the same weight that Heavy Chase did. Right. But I did it anyways. I found Miles Austin to play bass. He played with the Japanese Schoolgirls, and they were kind of one of my favorites. And Trevor Vick, who had never played drums in a band before, but after many meetings of just us showing each other our nipples without really having any real conversation, you know, he said something. He had listened to a song of mine that I had posted, and, you know, if I'd ever wanted anyone to play drums for it, to hit him up. And I was like, oh, dang, well, okay, I do need a drummer. Let's try this out.
Yeah.
And we jammed a little bit, and that became the first incarnation of Full Frontal Source, which is still the main project that I'm doing now. Yeah.
And who's in Full Frontal Source currently?
Currently, I kind of stole some other people from another local favorite, Cindy Darst and James Thompson from the Hungry Ears. I stole them because them and JD were one of the all-time favorite bands getting to see live, just because JD has such a ridiculous energy about him. You know,
he does. Yeah.
It's extremely contagious. And so now it's Cindy and James, and then Cale Knight plays bass. And Cale, he was in Cigarette Smoke and a couple other things before I moved to town, too. But he also plays bass in the cartoons, and I'm playing guitar in the cartoons right now. Yeah. Me and the cartoons, we've kind of gone back and forth, but I'm back in the full lineup playing guitar. Maybe some keys. We're in the studio, too, Full Frontal. We're going to release our new album, hopefully Record Store Day, the 21st of April. Cartoons, that's a little bit more lengthy of a process. Chris likes to get really micro in particular with it, so it's so it's taking a little bit longer, which is going to be good because it's sounding fantastic already. But by the end of this record, who knows what I'll be doing in a live setting, so I'll keep in my mind open for that.
And you haven't mentioned it, but to me it's honestly my favorite thing you do. Tell me about Penny Sheets.
Penny Sheets was born out of dark, dark times. The first record I did. So the thing with Penny Sheets is it's all me. I'd record all the music and mix it and put it out. Used to, I kind of had this thing to where it, in order for it to be a Penny Sheets song, it had to be thought of, written, recorded, and put out all within one sitting. And that was kind of like it has to do all these things for it to be a Penny Sheets song. The first record, I went through some life-changing experiences, to say the least. So I ended up in my bedroom in the kind of a commune house, so to speak, that I was living in. And I locked myself in my room for about a week with a whiskey bottle or two. And after that week was done, there was a EP online, and that's what it was. And it was all improv, too. That was just part of the thing. Like, you couldn't think about it too much. It just had to flow out and be done. That's what it is. The second EP, I kind of graduated a little bit, put a little bit more thought, you know, composition and vocal type planning in it. Not sure how long it's going to be a thing. Yeah, I don't know. I just put out this new song yesterday, I think. Yeah, yesterday. And I'm thinking it's about time for maybe a new solo project. The song I put out sounds a lot like Penny Sheets, but I'm going for something maybe a little more silly. Penny Sheets has gotten to be to where it's really introspective for me. Like, I find myself writing about things that, like, I never really thought I would write about, and it's really nice and therapeutic, but at the same time, I'm like, I gotta lighten up, dude. You know? So that's so this new solo project, we'll see.
I think it's really good.
I might not call it. I might not call it quits. You know, that's the great thing about solo projects is it's always there.
I was gonna say, in my opinion, like anytime there is, or anytime you have to do a solo project, and whether it's too introspective or not, if it's good for you, do it.
Right. Yeah.
You don't have to put it out, but sometimes, right, exactly. But sometimes you basically have to make it. So
yeah,
or it helps to make it, but. No, I dig it, dude.
But yeah, Penny Sheets has been really fun just because I've always loved recording. Like right. Back in 2001, I had somebody build me a PC that had RCA jacks as mm-hmm. audio inputs. And so that's like the first Passamaquoddy CD, and my first recordings were all just like on a, you know, like a PA mixer running stereo into the computer. Yeah. And so I've always been really interested and love just like tracking over myself and just having full, total control. A lot of times it gets to where it's just like super excessive and I have to, you know,
it's not good to have unlimited options.
Yes, sometimes. It is not good sometimes. Yeah. So like getting into this whole pop music thing has helped me kind of dial it down. Actually, Chris Rutledge of the cartoons has helped me dial it down a lot because he's a fantastic songwriter. But none of his songs or progressions or anything are super complex. You know, it's just catchy. It's there. It hits home. And playing with Chris over the past couple of years has really helped me dial my stuff back to where it's a little bit more palatable. I mean, I'm sure there's an audience out there for some of the stuff that I would do, but there's more of an audience for the dialed down stuff because it's just too much. There's like 7 guitars and just
you know, just a little overproduced.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little too much.
What is your favorite show you've ever had in Bowling Green?
Oh, favorite show in Bowling Green
that you've played?
That would be kind of rough. It would probably be there was a Rocky Ween a couple of years ago. Those have historically been some of the better shows that I've played, is the Halloween shows at Rocky's. And there was one where it was the cartoons and I don't know if it was Schools or not, or if it was Soft Crush, one of Jeremy Simon's bands.
Schools. We played there. Yeah. Honestly, it's been a minute.
Right. Yeah, see, same here. I'm not good with memory. But
there was people there. Yes. I don't know.
But it was... It was probably one of the Rocky Weens. Yeah. Because those are pretty heavy. Probably the one where I was really bad on mushrooms. That was an interesting set. That was an interesting set. I made it through.
What were you dressed as? Maybe I'll remember.
I wasn't
a tan suit and big fuzzy rabbit ears on.
I don't remember my particular costume for that year. My favorite costume at a Rocky Ween is I went as a red shirt from Star Trek.
Nice.
So I had just like a red sweater and a badge that I put on and had some, you know, face paint, made myself all gored up and that was me. I was a red shirt and I was telling people, stay away from me, save yourself.
Ensign Jones.
Yeah.
What is the worst show you've ever had?
The worst show that I've ever had, it was two in a row, one back-to-back. First tour that I ever went on was with a band in Eastern Kentucky. We were called Dead From Dancing, and it was really kind of a really melodic, hardcore metal punk, you know? It's like kind of like Between the Buried and Me a little bit sometimes, but we basically just really wanted to show people that, hey, we know how to play guitar. That was the thesis of the band. So we went on a tour down to the Gulf and back with some buddies in a band called Black Lung. And there was a show in Pascagoula, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And down in Pascagoula, our van broke down outside like an hour away. So we had to all kind of like cram into somebody's Camry or what was it? It was something like that. In a tiny, tiny little car, and to cram down there, make like multiple trips. And it was like just some old hokey bar. You know, I don't know. People were just sitting there, you know, having their beers, nobody paying too much attention. And it was funny though, because the guitarist from Black Lung got so drunk that as soon as the set was over, he just collapsed. Just guitar in hand, just fell backwards. He was down, out. And then the next show was just, you know, bands for bands, which happens. But like this one was a little bit more rough because it was a huge room. Like it was, you know, something like almost like Exit In size type room. But it was just absolutely nobody there. So just one of those really awkward type moments, yeah,
kind which of more which of a practice,
thing, right? So. Yeah, like one of those paid practices where you don't get paid much,
right? Yeah, I got you, man. All right, if you could go back to yourself and talk to yourself when you were first starting to play music, would you have done anything differently? Would you have any advice, knowing now what you know?
I think the thing that I've learned that's helped me not go crazy is just to not really have so many expectations. You know, there's a lot of different reasons why people do this. Some people do it because, you know, maybe they think it's super cool and they can get chicks, or maybe people do it because, you know, it helps them express themselves, you know. But not having not picking up a guitar and being like, okay, well, I'm gonna have a record deal this year. Like, I'm gonna do this, so I'm gonna do this. You know, just have fun. But, you know, just that's what I would tell 11-12-year-old me is like, hey, don't worry about it too much. Just have fun. Yeah. And of course, don't sell all those nice things that you've sold. I could probably retire with how much some of these things have gone up in price.
Right, yeah. Yeah. When do you think you'll quit playing music?
I don't think I can. I do, you know, like even if I couldn't ever play shows, I can't picture myself not doing it. Like the song that I did yesterday, it was just because I was aggravated and I was like, man, tardigrades, they have it awesome. They're like super mm-hmm. resilient. They can go in space. Like nothing bothers a tardigrade. And and so I'm just walking around work and I just start humming. I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of catchy. Yeah. All right, screw it. Here we go. I got to do this, you know, and it's and yeah. That's just how it is, because it happens all the time up there. Like mm-hmm. like whether I am conscious of it or not, whether it's something that's already been written or whether I'm just on autopilot. Like it's happening. So if I didn't do it, I'd probably just go crazy. Like I,
yeah, too much going on.
Yeah,
you gotta get it out, right?
You think like, I'm hearing voices?
The kid, you gonna think the kid will be a musician?
In the kid's mind, the kid is already a better musician than me. But
she thinks she's got it. Won't
care. Oh yeah, I got her a pretty nice little drum set. For Christmas, not this past one, but the Christmas before. And, you know, she can keep a beat on it and whatnot, but she won't let me near it. Right. If I get up there and I'm like, all right, let's try and count, you know, do this. She's like, Dad, this, I already know what I'm doing. You don't have to tell me. See, look.
Right.
And it's
yeah,
just total yeah. nonsense. See, I'm doing good. I know what I'm doing.
Right, yeah.
Like, all right, Jesus Christ, whatever.
Yeah, so we'll see.
So I think if she's ever going to get to where, like, she's seriously working towards honing a skill, I'm going to have to let old Matt DeVore teach her or something. But
somebody that's not dad, right?
Yeah, so, somebody, anybody that's not dad, because she does not respect dad when it comes to teaching. It's like, oh, yeah, Dad, you make it look easy enough, so it's got to be that easy, right? See, I already know what I'm doing. Mm. But the first instrument that I got, it was a little electric guitar, and I would keep it in an open tuning. So that she could just strum it, and it would be a nice, pretty chord, and she would make up songs. But she is a songwriter. She has a song that's out there on the internet that she wrote when she was two, and I kind of figured out her melody and put chords behind it, and we wrote it.
Yeah,
it's about a
that's awesome.
It's Window Cat. That's what it's called.
Window Cat.
Yeah,
good.
It's about a cat that's kind of eyeballing her from a window, and she's not having it. She doesn't like it. So she. That's what it's about.
That's great. That's great. Well, awesome, man. Thank you very much for your time.
No, thank you very much for having me. It was fun.
Like I said before, I don't know if I've said it since we've been here, but I really admire you and all the music you put out. I appreciate it.
Back at you.
Jared McKinney, everybody.
Hey, that's what they call me.